Welcome to the Jesus Culture Sacramento Message of the Week. We hope you enjoy this teaching from Becky Johnson. All right, guys, open up your Bibles to Exodus chapter 3. We're going to jump right into the Word of God this morning. I'm really excited. If you're watching from home, Exodus chapter 3, let me set you up a little bit on where we are joining. We're joining a mid-conversation here. In Exodus, we meet Moses, a man named Moses. We meet him as a baby. And Moses is a Hebrew child. The Hebrews are the Israelites, God's chosen people, God's children. They're living in captivity. They are living under the oppression of Egypt and the ruler of Egypt, Pharaoh. So we have the Israelites who have been enslaved by the Egyptians, and they begin to multiply. They're having babies and they are blessed, and the women are having babies easily and the midwives can't stop it. And Pharaoh looks out and he says, they're becoming more numerous than us. We don't want them to become too numerous and more powerful and overtake us. So he issues an edict to take care of all the Hebrew males and kill them when they're born. And so this is where we meet Moses, as a baby who's born a Hebrew child, and his mother does a really brave and courageous act, an act of trusting the Lord. And she saves that baby and she hides him for a while, and then she puts him in a basket and sends him down the river, giving you guys some recap here. And then in this amazing story of God's providence and protection, Moses gets found as a baby in the river by Pharaoh's daughter. It's this incredible story, one of my favorite stories in the Bible, where Moses' sister is watching everything go down. She goes to the princess and says, I can take that baby to his mother and to get nursed. And so she gets reunited with her baby. She gets to nurse him. And then he gets brought up in Pharaoh's house. Have you seen the Disney movie, The Prince of Egypt? There you go. So he gets raised in Pharaoh's house. So what happens is he grows up and he witnesses an Egyptian beating a Hebrew. Something's happening and he's beating a Hebrew. And Moses, in this act of boldness or rage or whatever, he defends the Hebrew, his brother, and he kills the Egyptian. He murders the Egyptian, and then someone sees it and kind of references it. So he flees in fear of his life, and he flees to Midian. And this is where Moses has been. He has been a shepherd in Midian. He gets married. He's tending his father-in-law, Jethro. He's tending his flocks, and he's been in Midian for 40 years tending sheep. And he has an encounter with God at the burning bush. So that's where we're jumping in. I needed to give you all that background because we're kind of coming mid-conversation. And a really interesting exchange happens between Moses, the man I just described, and God, okay? So Exodus chapter 3, let's start on verse 9. This is God speaking. Moses comes near. The bush is not being consumed. He takes off his sandals. God says, don't come any closer. And God begins to speak to Moses. The cry of the Israelites has reached me, and I've seen the way the Egyptians are oppressing them. So now go. I am sending you to Pharaoh to bring my people, the Israelites, out of Egypt. But Moses said to God, who am I that I should go to Pharaoh and bring the Israelites out of Egypt? And God said, I will be with you. And this will be the sign to you that it is I who have sent you. When you have brought the people out of Egypt, you will worship God on this mountain. Moses said to God, suppose I go to the Israelites and say to them, the God of your fathers has sent me to you. And they ask me, what is his name? Then what shall I tell them? God said to Moses, I am who I am. This is what you are to say to the Israelites. I am has sent me to you. All right, so let's go to, then now we're going to jump over to Exodus 4, verse 1. So then what God says is, hey, go and gather the elders of the Israelites. Go and kind of rally them and say, hey, get the elders, get them together and say, we're going to go confront Pharaoh and we are going to take the Israelites out of the land of Egypt. So go get the elders together, kind of tell them what the plan is. So he says that. I'm skipping for time's sake. Exodus 4, verse 1. Moses answered, what if they do not believe me or listen to me and say, the Lord did not appear to you? Then the Lord said to him, what is that in your hand? A staff, he replied. The Lord said, throw it on the ground. Moses threw it on the ground and it became a snake and he ran from it. Then the Lord said to him, reach out your hand and take it by the tail. So Moses reached out and took hold of the snake and it turned back into a staff. So I'm going to skip a little bit. What happens then is another miracle. He says, put your hand in your cloak. He does. He pulls it out. It's leprous. He puts it back in. It's made whole. So God begins to show him these miraculous signs, okay? And then he says, if they don't believe these two signs, you'll take water from the Nile, pour it on the dry ground. The water you take from the river will become blood. So pick up on verse 10, Exodus 4, verse 10. This is Moses' response. He says to the Lord, pardon your servant, Lord. I have never been eloquent, neither in the past nor since you have spoken to your servant. I am slow of speech and tongue. The Lord said to him, who gave human beings their mouths? Who makes them deaf or mute? Who gives them sight or makes them blind? Is it not I, the Lord? What I'm finding out is God is a really good lawyer. Very good arguer here. And Moses is very convinced that he is right. Now go, I will help you speak and will teach you what to say. But Moses said, pardon your servant, Lord. Please send someone else. That's amazing. And the amount of times I said that to the Lord this morning. Then the Lord's anger burned against Moses. And he said, what about your brother, Aaron the Levite? I know he can speak well. He's already on his way to meet you and will be glad to see you. You shall speak to him and put words in his mouth. I will help both of you speak and teach you what to do. He will speak to the people for you, and it will be as if he were your mouth and as if you were God to him. But take this staff in your hand so you can perform the signs with it. We're going to dive into this exchange, and there's a lot that we can learn and take away from our wonderful friend Moses here. But I don't know if you're like me, but I'm a really black and white person. I've come to find there's really black and white people, and then there's people like my husband who's just gray. Derek's all gray. Derek's all context, and I'm very black and white. And I think it's part of how I was raised. I'm very black and white, and I'm very convinced that I am right. So I'm fun, right? So, and it's just my family culture. I've realized like, oh, this is how I was raised. We're a convinced family, but we are also skeptical. So we're convinced in our skepticism. I don't know if anybody is relating. Like, we are convinced that we are right when we are skeptical about things. So it's like, and then we grew up in this really small town where everybody knows everybody's business. And it was like, once you became the guy of something or some way, like, it was really hard to convince the town you were not that person. Are you guys, like, let's say Joe was late to something, you know, and then it's just like, well, that's just who Joe is. Joe's late all the time. And no matter how hard Joe would try to not be late, we'd be like, Joe, you're late. So, you know, Joe's going to start a business. And we're like, yeah, well, he was late in 1985. So good luck starting a business, Joe. You're just late, you know. And we're just convinced about how we see people and then hard to change our minds. I got married and realized, you know, did I marry someone black and white too? Or, you know, who's convinced that they're right here? When two convinced people marry each other, then you need relationships 101, okay? But Derek's so great, and it's beautiful. It's way better this way. He's like, I don't know, I could be wrong. I'm like, I don't understand those words. But my wiring begins to break down, and my steam starts to pour out of my ears. What do you mean you could be wrong? Like, who thinks that, you know? Aren't you convinced? He's like, I don't know, there's context. This is artist. He's like, I don't know, depends. I'm like, wow, I don't have any of that at all. I am just convinced on however I see things. I say all that to say, we see Moses, he's convinced he's right in this exchange with God. Like, Moses is convinced that he's not the guy. And he has a really audacious exchange with God. Like, Moses, and when you read the life of Moses, this is kind of his MO. Like, he does this often with the Lord, right? God, the God who is slow to anger, Moses found a way to get that anger burning against him. I'm like, the anger of the Lord burned against Moses. I'm like, God's got a really long fuse. And Moses found a way to just zip right up to the point. Moses is convinced that he's right about how he sees himself. He's convinced he's right about how we see the situation. And if we're honest, we, as we walk with God, find ourselves convinced about how we see things. Convinced about how we see a situation. But the problem with that is when we're so convinced how we see something, this is the kind of life God is inviting us into. And here's where the two things converge. God invites us to a life that is outside of our human effort. The Christian life is a life that is beyond you. A life outside of your effort, outside of your strength, outside of your reason. This is what God calls us to. So get used to being called to this kind of life. Just get used to God asking you to do things outside of your human effort. This is what we see God doing with Moses here. So I want you, for the next 20 minutes, I want you to think about what this is in your life today. Because tons of different contexts here, tons of different situations have entered the room. So for some of us, what's outside of our ability, like a life outside of our human effort. For some, that's going to be getting out of debt. No way I can do that in my own strength. For some, it's a healthy marriage, having a family, living in peace, not battling with you know, torment or mental health issues, living in peace, relationships restored, physical healing, overcoming addiction, starting a business, just taking the posture in life that God has more for you. For some of us here, that is outside of our ability to have faith and hope that there is more for me. And so I want you to kind of get that in your mind. What is it that God is calling you to in this season of your life that you know is beyond your ability? And I just want to encourage you, we are not called to live a life confined to our own efforts. We're just not called to that kind of life. We're called to a life beyond us. And do you know why God invites us to that kind of life? Because that's where his power is best displayed. God's power is best displayed when he can take all the credit and glory for something because it was beyond us. God's power is best displayed in our limitation, in our weakness, where God gets to manifest himself in his power and his might and say, this, everything that person did, that was me. Because I said yes to a life that was beyond myself. That is a life where God's glory gets to be displayed. And this is just who he is. He's the God who calls Moses, a refugee of Egypt. Moses he's in voluntary exile. He fled, right? And he calls that man who fled Egypt to where? To confront the ruler of that same land. Do you think that God will continually call you back to the places you're running from? I think so. The places that we're fleeing, the places that we don't want to confront, God will continually invite us back. Can't do this in your own strength, but I'm going to be with you. This is who he is. He's been tending sheep for 40 years. I just want to detour for just one second. Detour. Moses has been away from Egypt for 40 years. He was the prince in Pharaoh's house, taken care of, a life of comfort, everything he needed, food, clothing, provision. And now he's been a shepherd for 40 years in Midian, you know, just tending sheep. That's a drastically different life than what he came from for 40 years. I just feel like this morning someone needs to hear, God's not done with you yet. You might have a memory of a life of comfort. You might have a memory of a life of breakthrough or, man, you know, I used to be here, but I've been wandering for 40 years. I've been in a wilderness for 40 years. My life has taken a different turn. God wasn't done with Moses yet. He was beginning to prepare him for a whole new plan. It's in Midian that he meets his wife and then he meets Jethro. Jethro was going to be instrumental to his success of leading the Israelites. God was setting Moses up for the next thing he was called to do. So you might be feeling like you're wandering or like you've left a land of greatness. God's preparing you to continue a life beyond you. Moses is no longer going to be the bystander to oppression, but now the deliverer. And so God's calling Moses back. This is why we need the burning bush moment. This is why we need the encounters with the voice of God so that we can be called back into what is beyond us, to what God has for us, the fullness that he promises us, you know? Taking the Israelites out of Egypt was completely beyond his ability. Moses knew it. God knew it. That's why he's arguing. That's why he's like, who am I? Well, who's going with me? You know, he's just excuses after excuses. He's like, yeah, sign me up. I can totally do that. I've been practicing. He's like, no thanks. You know, please send someone else. So why does God invite him into it? Could God have done it himself? Absolutely. Like newsflash, God doesn't need us. He wants us. He didn't look at Moses and say, oh, you're right. I got the wrong guy, wrong resume. I was looking at the wrong Moses, you know? He didn't need Moses. He wanted him. I do not need my kids to clean up with me. Like, amen, all the moms. There are many things that are easier for me to just do myself. Like way easier for me to clean up the playroom by myself. I can do it quickly. I know where it's, you know, where it goes and organize it. I can bust it out pretty quick. But I know one, that's not good for my kids. So I invite them in to participate with me. This is a picture of God. He is inviting us to participate in a life beyond our ability because he enjoys the development process, because he enjoys co-laboring with us. We're not called to just be spectators of God's kingdom advancing, but participants in it advancing. We cannot do it inside our own effort, so God promises to be with us. It's way easier for me to just clean up, you know? And it's so I invite my three-year-old in, come on, let's go clean up the playroom. They're putting things away wrong. They're complaining. It's taking twice as long. So I get over my control freak tendencies, and then I can, you know, tap into the enjoyment that it is to do something with my children. And this is God. I think it would have been way quicker if God just would have done it, because they end up in the wilderness for a long time and they keep messing up. But God's part saying, come and do this with me. So God's going to keep extending that invitation to you to be an active participant in his plans, not just a spectator. The Christian life is a life lived beyond what I can do for every single one of us. And so God calls Moses to this, and we see him wrestle with three human responses. That's what we're going to talk about the majority today. Three human responses pop up that I think we all wrestle with, that pop up for us all when we're called beyond our ability. Moses asks, who am I, who is God, and who are they? Who am I, who is God, and who are they? We're called to a life beyond our ability. We're called to something, start a business, have a family, see breakthrough in this area, you know, restore this relationship. Something happens and we get called outside of our ability. And oftentimes our first question can be, who am I to do that? This is self-doubt. Moses is doubting. He's doubting his identity, his ability. He's doubting, you know, his, why would you call me? Who am I, God, that I'd go to Pharaoh and free the Israelites? Which I just find interesting because, you know, Moses seemed to know exactly who he was 40 years earlier. Moses, the Hebrew prince of Egypt, defender of justice, going to kill a man. Standing in the gap for his brother, you know? Like that's not a timid man that goes out and does that. So we see, man, Moses has a, he's got a confidence shaken. He's doubting himself. This is a different man we're experiencing when he says, well, who am I to send that? I think what happens after seasons of wilderness or transition is we can lose identity. When things don't go the way we thought they were going to go, or we experience disappointment or discouragement comes long enough, we live in that space, we can begin to forget who it is we really are. We forget that we're called to a life beyond our ability. And so we have the moment with the Lord and we go, well, who am I? It's been a while since I've operated in faith. It's been a while since I've accessed the promises. It's been a while since fill in the blank. His first response is doubtful because it's self-focused. Moses is saying, who am I? God doesn't even respond to him. You notice that? God doesn't even acknowledge the question. He's not like, well, Moses, here's what's so awesome about you. Here's why I picked you. You're brave. You're handsome. You're strong. God's like, who am I? Moses goes, who am I? God's like, I'll be with you. His response, God's response to self-doubt is, I will be with you. He's refocusing Moses' attention. Who are you? You're nobody. It's not about who you are. It's about who you're with. And what God has called you to do, it's not about what you can do. It's not about your ability. It's not about your strength. It's not about your effort. It's about the God of the universe saying, I am going with you. I'm going with you into your business. I'm going with you into your health. I'm going with you into that marriage. I'm going with you. We got to get our focus. When we receive that, and all of us have it, all of us have been called to do something beyond. I was talking with people after first service and just all the different contexts. I want to buy a house. I want this relationship restored. I want to step into the next phase of my career. Just whatever it is, I'm called to something outside of my ability. I'm a new parent. We've got to get that first thing, that focus has to shift off of us onto who he is and who we're with. And so he refocuses his attention. I love it. He doesn't even respond to the question. Who am I? Doesn't matter. What are my qualifications? Doesn't matter. What about my past? Doesn't matter. What about my future? Doesn't matter. What about my personality? Doesn't matter. What about my speech? Doesn't matter. Who am I? I will be with you. That is God's response to you when you show up self-doubting and in question of your identity and what you're called to. God looks at you and says, I will be with you. Amen. So he refocuses the attention. It's so important that we get the attention and the focus off of ourselves. Because when we focus on us, we are always going to fall short. Amen? We're always going to fall short. I had to have a real reckoning with this whole process with parenting. Derek and I got married young, and for my own set of circumstances, my own past, my own wounding or whatever, we get married pretty young, and I say, hey, just so you know, I don't think I want kids. I didn't want kids. And it wasn't that I didn't want children. Actually, if I was honest, I had the burden and the desire to be a mother, but I was really scared to have children, thinking, how am I going to raise healthy kids? I didn't grow up in church. I want to raise children that love the Lord. Who am I to become a mother? It's probably better off that I just stay away from that. And so my journey into parenting, my journey into building a family is God looking at me saying, I'm with you. I'm going with you into that. I'm going with you into this journey, Becky. But if I'm focusing on me, I'm never going to get there. And our focus isn't where it should be. Can I have permission to tell you a dumb story? 9 a.m. gave me permission, so online permission. Don't turn that channel. Derek and I dated through high school, and so, you know, we at some point in our teenage relationship, we went to this amusement park called Cedar Point. It's a really famous amusement park in Ohio. And so, okay, listen, two kinds of people in the world, right? People who like thrill rides and people who don't. I am the don't kind. I do not like thrill rides. I will ride a roller coaster. A roller coaster is different. A thrill ride is for those who would like to brush the face of death. So I don't like thrill rides. Derek loves thrill rides. We go to this amusement park. I'm 16. He's 17. And I can tell you, as a 16-year-old girl, you know, being courted by Fabio, my focus is on Derek. Like, the thing I am focused on is being with my boyfriend. I am not thinking about the rides. I'm not thinking about our friends. I am with Derek. So he hops in line to this ride that I wasn't really paying attention to because my focus was just on being with Derek. The ride is called Vertical Velocity V2. At the time, it was one of the newest, fastest, stupidest rides in America. Okay? It had some kind of record at the time. I didn't pay attention. I didn't even look at the ride. It's so unlike me. As calculated and risk-averse as I am, this was a very outside-of-myself moment as I was captivated by Mr. Blue Eyes, right? So we're in line, and we were gross. Like, we're the one in line where I'm walking backwards so I don't have to break gaze, you know, and, like, holding hands with him the entire time. Like, when you see teenagers be romantic at an amusement park, you're just like, you're so gross. Like, you just, now that I'm, you know, in my mid-30s with my own family, I'm like, wow, you're dumb. And that's how I was. So there we are. And then I'm just focused on Derek. And now in the back of my mind, I hear the screaming. But I'm not thinking about it. I'm thinking about Derek. I mean, all my future. And I'm just getting lost in his pool of blue eyes, right? And so I'm hearing people scream. We're inching towards the line. But my focus is not on me. It's on him. So I'm hearing screams that are getting louder, and I'm like, wow, this ride sounds kind of intense. I wonder what it is, but I'm not really thinking about it. I'm going to read to you about the ride, and then I'm going to bring you into my experience with the face of death, okay? The coaster's passenger train runs along a 656-foot U-shaped track incorporating two 186-foot vertical towers. The forward tower incorporates a twisted spiral, and the rearward tower provides a straight free fall. Isn't that nice? 186-foot free fall. The 65-foot train, propelled by linear induction motors, is accelerated in less than 4 seconds to 70 miles an hour through the station, up the forward tower before dropping back down backwards through the station house and up the rear tower. A holding brake was incorporated on the rear tower and is able to suspend the train momentarily before dropping the straight free fall. That holding brake was disabled in 2008 because it was too dangerous. And I rode this ride in 2004. I rode a ride that could have killed me. The train passes at speed through the station 4 times. I love this. Before smoothly braked by an eddy current braking system before being brought into the final position. You guys, I get on this ride and I am focused on Derek up until the point where we break eye contact and we sit in the cart, and it's a inverted roller coaster. So our legs are dangling. The harness comes on. The harness comes on and I'm hit with the reality of what I'm about to do. And I'm like, oh my gosh, I don't do thrill rides. I don't do this well. Derek's all excited. And I'm like, oh my gosh. And then the countdown starts. And it's so ominous. It's like 5, 4. In my heart, I'm like, oh my gosh, I don't do this well. I'm starting to get anxious. Am I going to have a panic attack? Am I going to faint? I'm going to make a scene. Oh my gosh, it's so embarrassing. What's Derek going to think? And it's like, say goodbye to your mom. I'm like, what? Say goodbye to my mom? My mom's not here. I can't say goodbye to her. It's like, 3, 2, this is your final hour. I'm like, what? You know, it's like telling you, okay, 1, 0 to 70 in 4 seconds up that forward tower. I begin to I'm screaming. I am like, this is the worst thing. Oh my gosh. I am not enjoying this at all. Derek's laughing so hard. He's like, this chick's awesome. I can't believe she got on this ride. She's loving it. Listen to her screams. I'm like, no, mayday, like ripcord, you know, emergency exit. Oh my gosh. Now, mind you, I don't know what the ride's going to do because I've not been watching it the entire time we're in line because I was focused on my boyfriend. So I don't know. So I'm like, we go up the tower, we come back down and it stops in the station house. And I'm like, whew, okay, that was enough. That was good. And now we're going to, you know, and I'm pulling on the harness and I look at the, you know, pimply 17-year-old who's in charge of my life with the red button, you know, the attendant. And I remember looking at him and I kind of pull on the harness and I say, hey, can I get off now? And he looks at me like, what are you, you know, he knows what's about to happen. As I say the words, I just get shot backwards at 70 miles an hour. I think my eyes left. My eyes were there, but my body's out. We go up the rear tower and then the suspension brake holds. And thinking about it right now, honestly, the blood is leaving my head. I did this. And so we're on the suspension and I'm just looking at my life. I'm like, this is it. I'm only 16 years old. I had so much life to live. And we do that 4 more times. We get off the ride and Derek's like, that was awesome. I can't believe you rode that with me. And he's like, you didn't even say anything about it. I'm like, we are over. If that's what this looks like to date you, I want all my CDs back. If I could make that spiritual, if our focus could be just on Jesus, that we're just along for the ride, it's not about us. You know what? The picture that I have is some of us are actually watching people on thrill rides like that, living their best life, having fun, taking risks, advancing the kingdom, seeing breakthrough, watching God show up, and they're actually having fun, and we're in line eating a corn dog complaining about boring Christianity because our focus is on us and what we can do and our limitations. But if we could lock eyes with Jesus, then it's just like, I'm just along for the ride. Where are you taking me? I don't care. I know you're going with me. Who am I? Can I do this? Absolutely not, but you're going with me. I want to be with you. This is what happens when our focus gets shifted. God promises to be with us, and he's the God who doesn't abandon you. He's the God who goes with you. He goes with you where he's calling you. He is calling you to this life because he's there. He's there with you. Second question Moses asks is, who are you? Who is God? Suppose I go to the Israelites and say to them, the God of your fathers has sent me to you. And they ask me, what is his name? Then what shall I tell them? I think when we're called to a daunting task, we can forget who God is completely. And we ask the same question. We begin to want God to qualify himself. Well, are you God, my provider? You're asking me to step into that. Are you God, my defender? Are you God, my healer? Are you God, my protector? Are you God, whatever? And we question him. We want him to qualify yourself. Tell us who you are. Tell me, are you going to go with me? Do you have what I need? Are you able to meet me in this place? Do you have that quality about you? Are you really? Are you really? Because we're scared. It's outside of our ability. And so we want God to qualify himself. And I just love God's response. This could be a whole books are written on this response. God's response is, there's so much to unpack here, but he says, I am. Guys, that response is the only response humanity will ever need to the question, who goes with me? I am. That response is, I am. I am what? I am. I am all that there ever was. I am all that there ever is. I am all that there ever will be. Moses, you are going to need a variety of different things as you go on this life beyond you. And I am all of those things. I am. Well, God, are you going to go with me as I start this business? I am. Are you going to be with me in my journey of building a family? I am. Are you going to be with me as I contend for physical healing? I am. Are you, God, going to be with me? I am. This is God's response. What more could we say? Yes, yes. I am. He's more than we need. He's the God who sends you with everything. So I want to ask you this morning, where are you being sent? What are you being asked to do? What is beyond you? And do you really believe that I am is going with you? I am doesn't fall short. I am doesn't have lack. I am. And Moses becomes the man. It's amazing that he has a response to that. I'm like, wow, Moses, you are thick. He's convinced. He must have grown up in my house. Moses becomes the man who has this exchange. Like, this is a difficult scenario. Moses becomes this guy. You know, Moses goes from this guy. Who's going with me? Who are you really? What will they think? Who am I? I can't speak well. Please send someone else. He goes from that guy to the guy who says, I won't go if your presence doesn't go with me. He gets to the promised land and he goes, I don't want to go if your presence doesn't go with me. How is there that much of a transformation in his faith? What does he experience? I am. This is a man who experiences the power of I am. And all of a sudden his narrative changes from doubt and unbelief and fear to I don't want to go if you're not going with me because I know that I need I am wherever I'm going. You want to live in that kind of place. I don't want to go if you're not going with me because I know that you are. And when people ask, well, what is he? He is. Is he enough? He is. Is he there for me? He is. Is he providing? He is. Is he caring? He is. He is. Third question, who are they? I like this one. It's human. It's just really human. So what God does is he says, go get the Israelites, go get the elders, tell them the plan, take them with you. And he goes, well, what if they don't believe me? What if they don't listen to me? And this is just classic fear of man, right? Moses begins to worry they're going to doubt his encounter, that they're going to doubt his authority, they're going to doubt his revelation, they're going to doubt his ability. And so we have to decide in our life very quickly, who are they? Are we going to allow the ones in our life to qualify us? Are they the ones whose voices will be louder than God's? Are they the ones whose opinions will carry more weight than God? When he asks you to start to access the life beyond you, people are going to ask questions. Are you going to allow them to dictate what you access? Are you going to allow their doubts and their wonderings and their unbelief to affect you? I mean, this is it. There's no really way around it. We have to decide, what power am I willing to give them? What will they say? God's asking you to go to counseling. What will they say? God's asking you to jump into community. God's asking you to pray for, you know, you got to, again, put it in your context. What's God asking you to do? How audacious, how outside the box, how outside of what people have seen, how outside of my reputation. You can do things outside of your nature when you're focused on God. Me getting on a thrill ride, very outside of Becky Johnson, right? It's the power of when your focus is shifted. And so who are they? We get so caught up in what people think, what they'll say, what their opinions are. We fall victim to comparison. And I love God's response here. God's response to this question is the miraculous. That's interesting. He doesn't, what will they say, or what if they don't believe me? Take your staff. Miracle. Put your hand in your cloak. Miracle. If they don't believe that, we'll turn water into blood. God's response to the fear of man is a display of power that man can't argue. Listen, you don't have to convince people of who God is. He will show himself. And you're not going into your situation without power. You're not going into this life that God is calling you to without power. Is he the God that will show up in a miraculous display? He is. This is what he does. And so he shows up. I love that his response is miracles. You know, vulnerably with my parenting, told you, I'm like, oh, who am I? Who am I that I should become a mother? Okay, we answered that question. God, who are you? And you know this as a parent, just constantly in places where you have to trust that he's their father. that he cares about them, that he sees them constantly being challenged in that. And I love that. And keep me there, Lord. And I trust him. But the what, the who are they question as a parent, whew. Then I become a pastor and I'm like, whoa, I learned about the world of pastor's kids. I was like, whoa, that's a doozy. I didn't grow up with that. So now I'm like, oh my gosh, as you know, we grow in our calling and as we take places of authority and are answering the call of God to lead, I'm like, oh my gosh, what are they going to think about my kids? And are my kids on display? And my parents is on display. And when I'm at the supermarket, I'm at church and they throw a fit and what happens? And are people going to judge? And God just had to go, Becky, watch me show up. They don't qualify you as a mother. I'm with you. And this is my journey. Repeatedly wrestling through these three questions with everything that God calls me to do outside of my ability. What do they think, God? Watch me show up. What will they say? Watch my power. What will they think? You're not going into this without me. And then if we just keep going down the story, Moses famously, probably a lot of you have heard this, he gives the excuse of being slow of speech, which is funny. Because I read Acts 7:22. Moses was educated in all the wisdom of the Egyptians and was powerful in speech and action. I was like, wow, Moses is a liar. Yeah, he is bold, lying to God. I'm slow of speech and tongue. We just believe lies about ourselves, right? God's response too is so beautiful. He goes, well, who made that mouth? If I was more outgoing, who gave you that personality? My brain doesn't work that way. If I just thought more this way, who gave you that brain? What I see here is God taking credit for the things we're ashamed of. God redeeming the things that we think are weak, which I don't know, you know, there's debate if you get into the scholars of, oh, is that true or not? Did he have a speech impediment? Did he not? Either way, God goes, that mouth's mine. He doesn't go, don't, no, you're such a good orator. You're so good at it. Listen, just let me give you some vocal exercises. That's what you can do and you'll take this course. He goes, I made your mouth. That thing's mine. I'll bless it. I'm going with you. God's the only one who can qualify you for what he's called you to do. Worship team can come on up. Listen, here's the thing. We're going to end here. No one can answer these three questions. Who am I? Who is God? And who are they? And what you're called to do in the life that he's asking you to live outside of your ability, outside of you. You got to get with God and you got to wrestle through these questions. And after all of this, you know, these questions and God being so gracious with Moses, verse 13, he goes, please send someone else. And I just feel this morning that some of you are in that spot. You know what it is that he's asking you to do. You know what's available, but for whatever reason, you're just like, please send someone else. The lesson we learn here, he ain't doing it. He didn't send someone else. He's not going to send someone else into the life that you're called to live, the ground you're called to take, the victories you're called to claim. He isn't sending someone else. Your life beyond your ability is not for your neighbor to live. It is for you to live. So you can wrestle and it doesn't disqualify you. You can wrestle and it doesn't change God's mind. This is the beautiful thing. God didn't change his mind. He was with it. He was ride or die with Moses. He's like, you're my guy. Excuse, excuse, excuse. You're my guy. I'm calling you to this. It's beyond your ability. It's a daunting task. It seems impossible. Good thing I am. Good thing I have miraculous power. Good thing I'm going with you. Good thing I have all that you need. And he goes, all right, I love it. He concedes. He's like, fine, all right, take Aaron. Like, he didn't need any of that. God will move towards you. He gives you what you need. He sends you on the journey. So as we take communion, you guys can grab communion and just send it down. And this is what I want to do. We're going to go into a chorus. And I want you to have a moment. I want you to have 2 minutes. If you can hang with us, 2 minutes. You don't want to go out in that rain anyway. I want you to take 2 minutes and I just want you to get with the Lord. And I think there's going to be some of you in here that are at question one. You're like, ugh, who am I? I'm nobody. You've got lies that you believe about yourself. You're doubting. Pray. I pray that God would take the focus off of yourself today and begin to shift your eyes to his ability. Some of you are at question two. Who are you, God? Pray that he would show himself to you. Right now, he would begin to reveal who he is to you. He would show you the I am. And then some are in the who are they? Listen, you got to take that fear of man and you got to conquer it. You got to conquer fear of man. It's going to paralyze you. You're going in with power. God's voice is the only voice that matters. God's the qualifier, not them. God's your creator, not them. God's opinion matters, not theirs. And if you are a please send someone else, sir. Good luck with that. No. He's not. He wants to send you. He wants to send you into what he's called you to do.
Thanks for listening to the message of the week. Hungry for more? Search Jesus Culture on your podcast platforms to check out more from our Jesus Culture podcast network.